I don't really do slides very well, so there isn't any. But basically, this is a presentation about using Castle Windsor with ASP.NET MVC 3, or Pimpinery ASP.NET with MVC goodness. The original title was a bit long. Let you know, my name is Chris Canal. My Twitter handle is simply Chris Canal. Unfortunately, I don't blog. It's mainly because I'm lazy. But if you have any questions or want to correct anything that I've said that's probably wrong, just catch me on Twitter. Okay, so what we're basically going to do is look at how we can use Castle to streamline and make MVC development a little bit easier and smoother. They're going to make the assumption that you've done some MVC stuff before, and you're relatively comfortable or aware of the relevant solid principles of dependency injection and version of control and things. They won't be kind of covering any of those things. It's going to be fairly in-depth. There's going to be a lot of code, but I'll make it available after the sessions for you to download, pick apart, and reuse. If you have any questions, I'm not sure how to do it here. It's our first virtual thing, conference. So, if you used MVC before, you'll know that before MVC 3, there was the IE controller factory that was our hook point into controller resolution for the MVC framework. That worked okay, but obviously the controller builder now had two responsibilities: finding the type and constructing it and releasing it. So with MVC 3, they introduced a couple of other interfaces, mainly the IE dependency resolver, also the controller activator, where they tried to separate off the activation and construction of a controller. And a view activator and something else which I have managed to forget. There's also other interfaces for IE model binary provider, IE validation provider and things, and we'll look into some of them. I just want to say at the very start now, we are not going to be using a lot of the new MVC bits, I'm afraid. There's some problems with using them with Castle, and while there is possible solutions, I don't think that they would really bring anything to this presentation. They are available online, and I'll link to the possible solutions. If you want to read more information about what the problem is, I would recommend checking out Mike Hadlow's blog, where he discusses what the problem is and why we don't use it. It's essentially around the point that there's no release mechanism that we can easily reuse. I'll include this link in our notes. So, first thing we want to do with Castle Winter is obviously get hold of all the bits we're going to use. Hopefully you can see. There's four main open source libraries we're going to use for this project. That was going to be Castle, with a number of other assemblies that come with it. We're using Hibernate for ORM for mapping our data to our domain. I'll use Fluent in Hibernate, so we don't have to do any XML in Hibernate mapping. If you've done that before, you'll know that's not the best thing or the most fun thing in the world to do. And we'll also use an auto mapper to map our entities to view models in and out. Just really to reduce the amount of kind of boilerplate code we have to write to get things done. So in the Castle project, there's two primary assemblies that we're concerned about to start with to get configured. That's available from this download here, and that's Castle Windsor and Castle Core. Castle Core obviously is the core assembly that you need with Castle. It has everything they need to get up and running, and also includes dynamic proxy and a couple of built-in facilities that are handy, which we'll cover. And the Castle Windsor brings a lot of the configuration stuff and arguments the container. So those are two things that we're going to look at getting up and running just now. We'll come back to hibernating automata and things. So we've got basic MVC project with just a simple test that renders data. Obviously, your test projects will be bigger, everything will be covered, but I didn't write any tests, I'm afraid. But it all works. So, as you can see, nothing's really different from the standard template when you create a new project, which is how it should be. You don't want to go in and start playing things around when the point is that we want everything to be conventions, we want everything to be the same. So, to get started, we obviously need to add our references, which it would be Castle Core and Castle Windsor. Castle Core and where did it go? Castle Windsor. You can ignore everything else just now. That's essentially what we need to get up and running. So, this is our global SCX. This is where all it kind of kicks off from, as with any other MVC application. So first thing we want to do is we install our container. Now with Castle 2.5 it's gotten a lot easier to do this. Since we've got this from assembly helper class that allow us to tell the container where to find our installers. A Windsor installer is a class that does stuff to the container. If you ever use structure map, I think it's the same as convention in that, or a module and inject or something. It's essentially just a little class that will be loaded and fired up, and you'll get access to your container and your configuration. The from assembly gives you a lot of options to define where you want to get for it to search for the Windsor installers. We're just using this because we've got a single assembly project. But you can obviously you can pass in as many as you want. So if you wanted to have a different one for whatever reasons, you can easily enough chain them all together. As far as I'm aware, somebody could correct me, or I'll double check. The installers are executed as they're found. There's no particular order. I don't think you should bank on them executing in any order. You can take more control of it by using a factory, which I don't actually cover here, but there is some good documentation on the reference site, which I'll go over at the end of the session. So just now, that's all we really need to do to get up and running. Obviously, we need to create some installers. So we have a number of installers that we're going to look at that we use. I've found the easiest way is to break everything up into small chunks. That makes it easier to work with, easier to go and change and to isolate and to also test your container interaction. So you know that if you wanted to test something integrated, you just have to use that installer. And away you go. So the first thing that we need to do is register our controllers. Bring this in a bit. Okay, so Castle gives you a number of ways to register components singly or in bulk. Here we're using the all types interface class entry again. There's a number of options. They're all fairly documented. It gives you a range of ways to define where you want to check the all types from. Again, because we're only using a single assembly project, we can just use the from this assembly. But we've got number here. One we use quite a lot is from assembly containing, which takes a generic type argument or a type. That's kind of the quickest and easiest way I've found. Next is the based on. That essentially tells the registration that it wants to look at every class that's based on the I controller. The if statement further tightens up by saying that the class name must also end in the controller. The configure part allows us to configure the actual component registration within Castle. Essentially, what we're telling it is that the component should be named after the service type, which will be the concrete implementation, and its lifestyle should be transient. Transient Lifestyle, which essentially tells the container that every time this component is requested, it should instantiate a new instance. If you forget to set this, you could potentially get stale data or the first HTTP session that comes from the very first request. I think there's a check in MVC that would generally throw an error if it detects that this situation, but it's been a while since I've seen it, so I'm not completely sure. So once I've got our controllers installed in the container, we're pretty much ready to go. Okay, obviously, we now need to set up our controller factory. As I said, we're not using any of the MVC3 stuff, specifically because of the lifecycle issues and complexity that that can introduce. So we just have a simple implementation which you may have seen before or was in MVC Contra previously, that implements the getController instance method and uses information that comes from that to resolve our controller. We also have an extra update request host method here which we'll be coming back to. Which we'll come back to and go look into more details. And I've also got a release controller method, which is what's missing from all the new dependency bits. That allows us to dispose our controller properly and tell the container that we want to dispose it properly. So that will then obviously dispose everything that the controller depends upon. It's nice like that. So that's just got our controllers installed and our way of instantiating them. There's also another integration that we do with Castle and MVC, and that's from a kind of MVC components point of view. Joe Bogard originally had something similar on his blog post, and we use something similar with Castle. And that's called this install here. There's a blog post from Christoph, probably the main developer on Castle. Absolutely fantastic. Detailing about it. Basically, what we're doing is we're going to put everything that makes MVC tick into the container. This gives us a lot of flexibility in what we can do. Ideally, from where we come from developing, we don't like to have a dependency on anything that's going to be a problem. We have to write tests for everything. So we abstract everything away, and we whack an interface on something to make it a little bit more precise and easier to understand and easier to read. In order to achieve that, we have to put a lot of stuff into the container. But if you feel the benefits outweigh the issue that's here with the configuration. So the first thing is a controller context host. This is responsible for holding on to the current request's controller context. What we do is we register as a pair web request, so we know that you're going to get your controller context that you've registered, and its lifecycle is going to be for that particular request. The class is pretty simple. I simply set the controller context and the method to retrieving it. There's nothing complicated, nothing difficult. Again, the request host is pretty much the exact same. So we can hold on to the current request host and we can reuse it. Now we basically tell the container how to handle the request context requests. There's a lot of requests here. By using the factory method, which we'll touch upon a little bit more later, and the facility that comes with Castle. This applies to just about all of the MVC bits that we want to play with, to use. So we've got HTTP context base, which is a factory method, which returns a wrapper for the current HTTP context. And same again for the HTTP session. We resolve it from the HTTP base and return the session, so we know where it's coming from, we know it's going to be right session. again, for the HTTP request space, we use HTTP context space and the request. The controller context, we use our controller context host if we're retrieving that, and the same for the session data, session temp data. Essentially, we've got everything we need to run the MVC app in the container. One of the upshots of this is we can register the URL helper and HTML helper in the container, and we can use that from anywhere, not just in the view. We've found this really handy for using it with the automapper for sending simplified models down to the view. So instead of having to HTML.actionLink, whatever, which some of our designers might have a problem with, or the routes might not even really be agreed on. We can have a simple property that says link to or anything, and we can resolve it properly using HTML helper and the automapper class or a converter or something like that. So it gives us a lot more flexibility and can really simplify and make our views easy for designers to work with and for ourselves to actually write and to debug, because we are pretty much decoupled. Okay, so that's the Windsor side of configuration done with regards to our controller configuration and extend, get a little bit more control over our components and what's inside the container. I haven't really changed anything on this at all. It's just to show you how we can get up and run. So we are running, it is all on top of the container, so if we go to the browse, kind of fingers crossed this isn't going to fall over. So this is all coming from the database and things. next is we're going to start looking into some... that's how you get question and answers. Okay, I have, did I not say that? Okay, so all the activators, just to also point out, I'm not sure if I said it, all the activators that came with MVC3 construct everything, but they don't destroy anything, and that could be a problem by default implementation of Castle. You'll correct me again, probably. Okay, so we're going to start looking into some facilities that comes with Castle. They're great. They can reduce a lot of rubbish boilerplate stuff that you want to use. So what we're going to look at is the logging facility and show you how to get up and run with Log4Net. But it could be Nlog. It doesn't really matter. Again, we're working on the Castle abstraction, so we can chop and change. I know some people that prefer Nlog. Log4Net is a nightmare sometimes, but it works. So again, come to our logging. I forget I can zoom out. Okay, so we use this add facility method, which also has a generic override, so you can just pass it straight in there. Did not go away. So basically all we're doing is we're adding a facility to the container. Facility is, think of like a feature or a package or something. It gives you some extended functionality that takes advantage of the container, lets you look into that, and it can be, it's a good way of packaging up as well things. We use a lot in work for repeatable stuff that use across projects and things like that. Gives you a set interface that hooks in with your container and gives you a good bit of flexibility. So login facility is fairly straightforward. We need to give it a login implementation. There's a good number of options. I've only ever used Log4Net, so I'm not sure about these other extended and things like that. Log4Net works. It has everything we need, but if you, as you can see, you can use whatever you want. And then obviously, I've put together a really simple, probably wrong, logging interceptor just a demo. How we can use it. But I won't show you the interceptor just now because we'll be coming back to that. So instead, I will just jump to a home controller, and apologies for some live coding. So as you can see, we're using the iLogger, which if you've ever used any other logging thing, everybody has one. But what we're concerned with is we want to use the castle.core.log, the iLogger implementation. We're going to use property injection to inject it into wherever we use it, so it's essentially an optional dependency. It's not coming from the constructor, you don't need it there. But we need something there. Or it's going to break if we use it. Don't want to have to litter our code with if statements and things like that. So we'll use what we can to get around that. So choose an int field and we'll set it to the value. Pretty basic stuff. Now, oops, that doesn't go in there. So our logger now becomes a field, and we can use a null logger instance. So we can now comfortably use our logger wherever we want in this, and even if it's not resolved. Or if it's not set or anything, it's still going to work okay. Generally, unless you set it to null or something like that. And that's going to be resolved if I stick a breakpoint on this. Hopefully, this will be resolved okay. So now we have our logger. So it's a default logger and it's got everything we need. In the natural login file, it turns out it will be the correct type. It will use our log for net configuration file. Oops. That will be defined in the. Unless you don't have one in the project or you forgot to copy it over, which I clearly did. So that's the login facility, pretty much up and running, and ignore all those errors. I'm confused if we're still running debugger. Yes. So that's pretty much it for the login. We can use it wherever we want now. It doesn't matter what implementation, what concrete type we're going to use, log for net, nlog, or custom pigeons, as long as there's it complies to the facility contracts and interfaces, we're ready to go. Which is nice. Previously, before we had something like this, login was sometimes a bit tricky, especially with log for net, which had a really weird setup and configuration. So this takes it all away, makes life easier, means we can be lazier, which is good. So that's for logging. I've got a question. No, I. 2 seconds, sorry. I don't know if that's a good answer or not. Okay, so that's for logging. We're all set up, ready to go. We can log stuff in breaks. We can log it. Do our login things. So. Now, persistence. We're going to go with nHibernate because I prefer it, our team prefers it, and it works, and that's that. Let's not have any big arguments, although you all have to listen to me so I could say whatever I really wanted to. But I won't. So, we're going to use nHibernate 3. Which is fairly new. I haven't actually really used it in the wild yet. We're going to use Fluent and Hibernate to configure it because it's amazing and I hate configuration. We all should, especially when it's XML. We're also going to use an Hibernate facility, which needs a bit of love, which I said I would do and we'll get to at some point. And we're going to use Transaction facility. These things will take a lot of headache. Again, just get rid of so much boilerplate, let us do what we want to do, what we get paid to do, or browse Twitter, whichever one you want. So our entry point again is our installer, So this is the order we're going to do. We're going to register our transaction facility first, and then we're going to register in a Hibernate integration, that will take care of all our session management and all that magic stuff. And we're going to register our repository. You don't have to use a depository. This is not is how you do it or anything. Whatever your data access strategy might be for above in Hibernate is completely up to you. So the first thing is register transaction facility. There we go. It's just a facility register and job pretty much done. There is some attributes we can use in other places which we'll come to. But from a registration point of view, that's that done. Things get a bit trickier for the in-Hibernate integration. Because we test everything, we like to have our database tests against not SQL Server anyway. So we use SQLite. I sometimes use SQLite for actual development. I don't have SQL Server installed in this machine just now. So we introduce an interface called in-Hibernate configuration. Oops. Which has just three methods that works for us. We have get configuration, which returns in a Hibernate configuration, and we have the get connection, which is the main bit we want to override when we're testing, and the get fluent configuration if you want to tweak the automap or anything like that. It does do quite a few things, but it works. We can easily reuse it in our tests and stuff. So we register on our container. Now we touch on our another component for we tell services that in Hibernate configuration, and our default our implementation is our default in Hibernate configuration. For that registered, we now need to register our configuration builder. The in Hibernate integration has an interface called iConfiguration Builder that gives you the control of returning the in Hibernate configuration. The default one uses the XML-based configuration from Castle. You know, so you can supply your own, which is what we're going to do. We supply a Fluent in-Hibernate configuration builder, and that takes a dependency on the in-Hibernate configuration and simply calls get configuration. It's nice and simple, just a simple wrapper around the in-Hibernate configuration instance. Interface even, and next we register in Hibernate facility. This is this here. We're telling it what we want to use for our configuration builder, and that it's going to run on the web. We have to supply everything else from the configuration builder, but that's that pretty much set up. That will and set up everything that's needed for session management on the web and things, and which we'll come back and we'll see them in action and look at the repository. And it's great, that saves so much hassle. The place where I'm just now restarted, there was a lot of issues were beginning to crop up with session life cycles and things, and that they had their own code to run it. And we went with this, and well, I mean, it's not complete perfect, it's an open source, it's a little bit needs some love. It just removes a lot of boilerplate code and stuff, concerns that you just are a pain in the ass, really, to worry about. And last but not least is our simple repository, which we'll come back to. So, as I said, our implementation of the in-Hibernate configuration is where our mapping magic happens. So our connection for the actual live app, we use MS SQL Configuration 2008 somewhere in the cloud, I'm assuming. This again, it's Fluent in Hibernate, so it gives you a nice Fluent interface for all your configuration. So if we wanted to return, we've got SQLite, MySQL, Postgres. There's a range of anything in Hibernate supports we've got here. And also, you just follow the Fluent interface down to its conclusion of what you want to map. Now, the get Fluent configuration is what that's actually called externally, generally, and this return our automap and Fluent configuration. So we use the Fluently configure entrance, and we tell the database, and we tell it where to get the mappings from. This app only uses auto mappings, so that's the only one I've configured. But you've got your Fluent mappings, which uses a class map, which I'm not going to touch upon, because you can get the same thing with overrides, which we'll look at. And we've got HBM mappings, which you might happen to have. Well, I'm sure plenty of people have, and you can use them here and things. So obviously the database is called Sket Connection, and our build automap calls this our automap tab calls build automap. Here is how we configure our automap. So we're just basically telling it that we want to automap the template that contains the entity using this configuration. We want to pull the conventions from the assembly that holds this convention, alterations from this convention, this little shortcut that we use on use the overrides from this, and we ignore the base of that entity. And that's pretty much it. That will all scan the assembly and load up any conventions, alterations, overrides. So that means we can comfortably just drop in new entities with their relevant overrides or conventions or anything that will be picked up and used. Same way as the Winsor installers. It just makes it easier for anyone on the team to get the ball rolling and get some development done. So our in Hibernate configuration, this comes from Fluent in Hibernate. The interface is actually iAutomatic configuration, but that's big and will make you cry. So we just implement the default automatic configuration, which gives us all the methods that we can override so we can tailor it specifically to what we want to do. So we've got the should map. We tell it any type that can be cast to an entity, which is essentially a nicer little wrapper from iAssignable, which I probably stole from Fluent and Hibernate or Jeremy Miller, or one of them. And then we call the base should map because it does some additional checks and things. This is the central point for kind of global configuration. You get number and methods. We've got should map for members, so you have kind of global control for your properties. You get ID, action strategy, is it a component? You've got everything that you kind of need here to configure it. Obviously, your component might have a certain namespace or a certain class it inherit from and things. So it's a nice way of kind of clumping this configuration together, because now we can easily use it in our test if we didn't have it as internal, or we can reshare it with our team, or we can have it in a central point, which we kind of generally do. It just means that we've got a little code to do everything, to do lots of things. We've got our little hook points, we don't lose any control, we don't have a GUI that has a black hole that sucks everything into it. So that's our configuration. So back to my persistence installer even. So that's and configuration done. We looked at our configuration builder and Veristore and Hibernate facility, which is done here. So check the notes. Okay, so let's have a look at some Fluent and Hibernate stuff further. So our default storm conventions, which has got a company name in it, so you know we use it. We all agreed on our conventions and things, so this kind of drives it forward. So our ID convention is we access it, the property is in a lowercase field, and the column name is the entity plus ID. So if that's person, it'll be person ID. The class instance we use to change our table name, or to name our table. So we use Inflector, which can do pluralize and a whole bunch of other little things, which is handy, to pluralize the entity type name. So person becomes people, and octopus becomes octopi with this. There is a naming service in .NET 4 which names octoped. But this Inflector one was around, we were using it before, and we've got the source and stuff like that, so we can change how we want. And I've got some behaviours on our collections. Like our many-to-many collection, we'll get the types, sort them alphabetically, and name our table accordingly. So every time we know what's going to happen, what the database is going to structure every project, in theory, should be the same, if nobody goes in and changes things. And we can reuse that anywhere we want. Another one is foreign key convention, which inherits from the Fluent and Hibernate convention's foreign key convention, which gives us access to naming our foreign keys. The primary method is this get key name. This was ported from an earlier version of Fluent in Hibernate, where occasionally the property would come in as null. I'm not sure if that's strictly true anymore. extreme difficulty. There's a couple of presentations today about dependency management of OpenWrap and NuGet. I originally helped out on a project called HornGet, which tried to build everything from the source, which turned into being a nightmare. I would definitely check the NuGet and the OpenWrap. There are still early doors for them, and we've still got a long way to go, but it's beginning to get there. For dependency, for if you want to use the tools in this, I would say get the source and use this. And our company, we've designated one person that's responsible for recompiling and distributing their references and assemblies and things like that. And that person happens to be me. It is a problem, and we are getting there. Yes. I don't know how these things work. But okay, so if you have a question, just put it in there and I'll eventually get to it. Does Fluent and Hibernate run faster than XML source? Does it run faster? I'm not sure. There's a bit of stick between in Hibernate and Fluent and Hibernate, how it all works with the schematic model and things like that. The best guy to ask for that is James Gregory. From a development point of view, it's faster. And for us, that does. That's it. And a performance point of view, if it does slow down, then we'll look into it and investigate it. And if that's the problem, if that's the bottleneck, then we'll go to XML files. It's all depending on the situation. But from a development point of view and a readability point of view, it's faster and easier. Yes, there is a persistent store for the in-Hibernate configuration. There's one with the in-Hibernate facility as well, which can speed things up. I've never actually used it myself. I haven't had that much of a problem yet. But the options, they are there. I would actually quite like to see numbers myself on the Fluent in-Hibernate XML files. But for us, it's not really an issue. If performance is your issue, then it'll be have a worth looking into. But the majority of the time, the only impact you'll get is at startup when it's generating the mappings and things. I worked on a project which took 40 seconds or so, and I think later on it ended up a minute and a half to compile the mappings and things like that. So there's always going to be issues around those. So that took me under the email on. Okay, I don't know if I should have done that. Okay, distracted myself. No answer to the question. Okay, so. As a conventions, the conventions are a really, really nice way of customizing it beyond the configuration of how you want it. We've got a number of different conventions. If you've got ReSharper, which you should, if you want to look at them, from here, from an easy point of view, if I can spell it right, there is plenty of them, which I wanted to look at in the object browser. Now we get to object browser. There's lots of them here. You can have a look at it and have a play around with them. Thing. There's two parts to a convention, generally, besides from a global one like the Storm, default Storm conventions. There's the convention and the acceptance. The acceptance allows you to make a decision on whether that convention should be applied to this particular type, to this particular member and things. The implementation of that might be, so see we add ID. A convention acceptance. That one will ask us to give us a method. I've not got a criteria of any either expects. That takes a lambda predicate and gives us a control so we can make a decision for each type that's being mapped as to whether this convention should be applied or not. This coupled with the kind of global configuration really reduces or completely gets rid of any kind of specific entity mapping. It allows you to do whole apps with like minimum of configuration. It just removes so much code. It's really how like more no code should be done. And it's all extendable, it's all there, all the parts, all the interface, all the abstractions, we can go in and interject at any point we want. And it's nice. It means we can get things done quickly and easily, and we can do other cool things. Like make coffee. But there's going to be times when I need to. What time is it? 15 minutes. Okay. So we'll have a quick look at the override. The override, if you need it to get in and tweak a specific entity's map, is your kind of entry point instead of a class map. I'd go for the auto mapping conventions, auto mapping override before going looking into a class map. It's just a little bit nicer. Also, find that if you can get refactoring stage or kind of reworking stage, you can sit with people and go through all the overrides and say, okay, this is reused across quite a few places. Let's turn it into a convention. Say here, I don't like I like using sets because it's easier for dealing with things that might have repeat items and things when you don't want it. So we have this category has products, which is a set, which has a cascade all. So we might want to reuse that across, so we can promote it to a convention, or we can use it here. Again, there's no actual wiring required for this. This is automatically picked up for us by the by Fluent in Hibernate, and away it goes, does its magic and does the mapping. So which is great. And then we have a little test here that uses our default configuration that will then generate our database, create our some entities and things like that. And I'll just pick it up, and if we add any new entities, like if we run this test and I drag this into here. I'm currently sharing, but that's good, you can see it. It creates our database for us, our conventions are all complied to and things like that. But say we decide, okay, so we got a new feature. Stuff needs to get done, you know, changes, unfortunately. So if we come into here and just add person, and we'll just not do that. So we'll just give him the entity and we'll give him a name. Oops. Of course, all my shortcuts decide to not work, so string, give him a name. And if we rerun our test, there's my session thing, there we go. Get out there. And this will run. It'll pass, of course. And if we scroll down to the bottom, we've now got people table where we've been generated. We've done no configuration at all, it's just all been picked up automatically. The flexibility that gives that and the freedom is immense. We can just get things done. And that same principle applies to throughout the whole application. If we have a service, we have a controller, we have anything that needs to be done and needs to have a dependency, we can include it in the project and it'll be picked up. So we have 10 minutes. So that's a brief overview of getting up and running with Castle, using some of the facilities to make our life a lot easier. And it works, it is good. There is a little bit of complexity in getting it up and running and getting it configured and things like that, but once it's done, it's done. You generally don't need to return to it. And you know exactly what's going on, the code's there, the source is on there and things like that. So the learning curve does get a lot less, and as you build up knowledge, you'll learn the tools, you'll learn what's comfortable with yourselves, and it is completely flexible. So we seem to have 10 minutes, so I'd like to pimp something that I've done a little bit. So filters, which I didn't really touch upon. There's a new interface where you can do a convention filter provider and things. So I've been working on for the past year or so a project called Fluent MVC. Of course, it's got Fluent, everything has to have in it. That allows you to define filters that can come from the container using a simple Flutter filter interface. So this logged in status filter simply dumps some rubbish into the view bag, which then appears here. Of course, we're not logged in at all, it's completely fake security. So essentially what this does here is it tells, okay, we want a filter, and that's it. This is will be now be applied to absolutely every single controller in this application. Let's say we want it on just the home controller, so we can tell it that we want it in the home controller. So that won't be applied to the home controller now. So if we go and we go to our browse, this here, and we should. Okay, so. And don't have a null check in there. But as you can see, it's not running for this. And if you go to the home controller, that will that'll be fine. But that's coming from the container. If we jump to our notifier. So we're registering everything in the container. That's going to be resolved from the container. We can take any kind of dependency in it we want. And we can also do except for. If you want it on a specific action, we can do it there. And I like it, it works for us. And that's my kind of self-promotion side of things. Does anyone have any questions? Anything you want to relook at? I'm sorry we didn't get to Automapper. I guess I can quickly, if no one's got any questions, where did that go? I can quickly look through that. I would like to have gathered more on that. Okay, so Automapper does object-to-object mapping. It's great for sending dummy models. Well, not dummy. Dumb models to the view and things like that. You've got URL helper in your containers. I showed you how to do. You can construct your URLs and things like that, which means you can also test it easily. So again, we our entry point for is our Automapper installer. We initialize our mapper and use a construct service using with resolve. This, I think, as well has an issue, which we can come back to. Never. So we register our profiles. The profiles are profiles that tell Automapper how to do things. So we have a category profile. Here we tell it we want to create a map between a category and a category detail. And then we want to create a map between a category and a category input. We want to create a category and a select item. This is how we construct our select item. It also gives you converters, which is what you would use if you've got dependencies. As you can see, we take a dependency in iRepository here, we find it by the ID, and then remap the rest of the properties. To define that, we use a create map and a convert using. This will then, when we want to map this method will be called. So that's where in default when it does activate our dot create instance. So if you have a dependency and you select that type, it's gonna error out on you. But now this is gonna be resolved from the container for us, and we can do again lots of funky cool stuff. What this means, the upshot, is we can simplify our controllers because nobody likes complicated controllers. So in our products controller, our browse controller, so browse slash products, this is what happens. We say, okay, we want to get the category because that's what we're actually kind of looking at. So we got a category and we return an automat view. I just nicked this from CodeCamp server. So don't tell them, they might come and shoot me. But it's really nice. It's just basically an automat view that will do your mapping for you. So we're telling it we want an automat view with a browse products model going down against a category. Then that will go off to Automapper and go, okay, this is what we want to map. And it will say, okay, how do I do it? Is this map created? And at that point, it will come to here and it will execute this. But say we wanted a little bit more control, we could either use a converter, or if we wanted to do it for a specific member. So for the name, we get an options. We want to map it from our name. And then that will now come down to our view as actually I think I can so we go in here, we should be able to see this. So again, it's all hooked around the container, so in any of these converters or profiles, of course we've still got that condition doing that. But honestly, trust me, that would appear there. So as you can see, we've simplified our view, and we're sending down some simpler objects to the view, and they've been mapped. So the complexity of actually mapping those views, any kind of funkiness, any mapping URLs, things that are taken care of somewhere else. Here we can just do what a controller should be doing. We're just controlling where the data comes from and where we want to send it to. That's the auto mapping. I've still got time. I've still got 5 minutes. Here's loads of questions. Okay, actually, what I'm going to use this 5 minutes for now is to go over some resources, which Christos Kelly reminded me of. Okay, so, not this browser window anymore. Go away. This documentation here is fantastic. It has everything that you need, everything to get up and running. There's a good MVC tutorial as well, if you think mine was terrible. It's everything you need to know is going to be here. Obviously, if you want to contribute back to it or anything's wrong, it's a wiki we can do all that. Other resources, obviously there's a documentation for each page, for each assembly, for each project. They've got their own pages and stuff like that. But everybody knows how to use Google. It's all there for it. I've been getting into trouble before for saying this in a presentation. But the truth, if you can't use Google, you shouldn't be a developer. There's hundreds of resources out here, but for Castle, this is the number one. For in Hibernate, there is the NHForge, when it's up. That collects a lot of stuff, pulls it all together. For Fluent and Hibernate, there's a website, there's a mail list, just don't send annoy James. There's also Twitter, which is, especially from the Castle point of view, is absolutely fantastic for help. And can we get the source code? No. Yes. What I'll do is I'll push it off into my GitHub account and send around the details. I'll get it onto the MVC conference site, or you can follow me, or I'll put it onto Twitter with the hashtag and stuff like that. I'll do that in about 10 minutes. Before conventions, map sessions are handled using inhibitor and its persistence apart from. Okay, so sorry, I've managed to completely not go into the repository. Okay, so. And because of that, I've messed up a whole bunch of stuff. So, what we get now from the Hibernate facility is a session manager and die session. And that takes care of everything for us. It's automatically stored in the magical place where the session's going to stay for this request and stuff like that, which is it needs to be context, basically. And we can reuse the same kind of stuff across, if it's a desktop app or a... No, not Silverlight, because we don't have a build for Silverlight. Or a web app and things. Here we've got our transactional attributes, which tells if this class runs in a transaction, this method runs in a transaction, that method runs in a transaction. That's our kind of extended configuration of the transaction facility. That completely slipped my mind. I think if you're already using the Hibernate session directly and things, that you might not get a lot of additional stuff from here. But for ourselves, it's given us quite a bit and stuff that we don't have to worry about. I'm not sure if that's answered your question. You can't catch me on Twitter. Okay, and does web use manage for security? Yes, it does. It's not in the source or anything. There was a start on the Fluent interface, and I put it together for this presentation. I'll do a pull request, and essentially that's it. Just generates pretty much the exact same config as the old XML does. So the web stuff, it's the exact same behaviour as it did previously. So yes, the transaction scope and commits, yes, coupled with the transaction facility, that will all come together for you and do magic stuff. I guess I should probably let you guys head off to your next thing. I probably have to give this room to somebody else. I'll work out the stop button. But thanks for coming along. Hope you guys enjoy the rest of your day and drink lots of coffee, because I think it's really early for a lot of you guys.